welcome. I'm so excited to be able to learn with you in the last of our three-part series on praying anew, what it means to pray in this particular moment. And tonight we're going to look at the Jewish approach to spontaneous prayer, to the prayer that comes from our own hearts and our own words, as opposed to the words that we looked at in the last two sessions. The first one was about Kaddish and saying the mourner's Kaddish in a time when there's no minyan. What could Kaddish mean? What are the substitutes for Kaddish when you can't say it within a minyan? And last week we looked at Rifa'enu, the prayer for healing that's said in the Amida, in the daily Amida. And in that way, we were really trying to find meaning in the liturgy that we already have given to us. And tonight we're going to look at what are the structures and containers that the tradition offers to us for our own prayers. And I wanted to start off with a quote from Abraham Joshua Heschel. This was a distinction that Abraham Joshua Heschel made in an article that was published originally in the mid-1940s, which I think is a very helpful orientation to the tension that we're dealing with between what it means to connect to words that we already are handed, the words of our Siddur, versus the words that we experience coming out of our own hearts. So I'm going to read you this quote and you'll see the distinction here. We have to distinguish between two main types of prayer, says Heschel. Prayer is an act of expression and prayer as an act of empathy. And this theme of empathy actually arises in other of Heschel's writings when he's talking specifically about the given words of prayer. So the first type, the act of expression, that's actually the focus that we're looking at tonight. The first type takes place when there is a strong feeling within that leads to prayer. When we are stirred by something and seek words to express our state of mind. That is to say, we already know we want to say something. We're looking for the right words to say it, but it's a feeling that we need to channel into words that are coming from us. Now, Heschel makes a claim about the second type of prayer, the act of empathy, but the more common type of prayer, the claim is that it's more likely to be this situation, the more common type of prayer is an act of empathy. There need be no prayerful mood in us when we begin to pray. Mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma, it just comes of its own. It is through our reading and feeling the words of the prayers, through imaginative projection of our consciousness into the meaning of the words, and through empathy into the ideas with which the words are pregnant, that this type of prayer comes to pass. So the act of empathy is you're empathizing with the words that are already given to you, and even though you don't start off with a feeling, it leads to feeling that is generated by the words, as opposed to the other direction, which is I have a feeling and I need to put it into words. And then he says, the ability to express what is hidden in the heart, i.e. the first type, the act of expression, the spontaneous prayer, is a rare gift and cannot be counted upon by all men, by all people. So this is something that that Heschel is, again, making a claim. The more common type of prayer is an act of empathy. That is to say, you're reading the words and trying to relate to them, as opposed to what he says is a harder thing, a more uncommon, a rare gift, which is the ability to take those feelings, those inchoate needs to express something and put them into words. And I think as we probably know, Jews, maybe he's right, you know, sort of demographically, we don't have the data. We could do a little bit of polling tonight, but over time, Jews have often experienced our prayerful gatherings much more in the range of the act of empathy as opposed to the act of expression. That is to say, we often associate public Jewish prayer as reciting liturgy that's given to us. And we struggle with whether or not we can find meaning, whether or not we can empathize with those words. We don't really think about too much the act of expression or how we give voice to our own words, perhaps, because we don't really associate our public liturgy with that option. That's not something that we really connect to as the structure of Jewish prayer. But as we're going to see here tonight, it's much more complicated than that. And I would say that there always was a channel for this act of expression to be used in the public liturgy. It's not just when you're isolated in your home and you can't go to shul, and now you can do whatever you want and no one's looking over your shoulder. Now's your time to say whatever comes into your heart, which may be a result of us being in isolation now, and it may in fact increase our desire and our ability to pray more spontaneously. But what I want to argue is the spontaneous prayer, the prayer from the heart, the act of expression, was always a part of the dynamics and the DNA of the public liturgy. And we just need to uncover those places and those sources in order to see how that room was always made for us. Then we can ask the question of what do we do with those spaces? And I will sort of offer us some challenges on that front as we move through the evening. All right, but let's, as is our custom, as has become our custom, we're gonna do a little poll. And we have a few polls that we can do tonight. I'm going to say for Morty to launch the first poll, which is number three on our list, actually, in a time of COVID, which of the following has been most meaningful to you? And we have here requests for healing or health, requests for general blessings to a family member or loved one, prayers of gratitude, or other. But it looks like we have prayers of gratitude are in fact in the lead at 45%, and prayers requests for healing or health, obviously particularly connected to our time, at 34%. General blessings to a family member or loved one, not in the category of gratitude or health, only 10%, and other 12%. So we're feeling gratitude, and that's something that we want to express. And to the extent that there are requests, seems like requests for healing and health are sort of leading that pack there. So now I didn't specify here whether this is, you know, prayers of gratitude that are spontaneous or not spontaneous, but we're just sort of seeing what state of mind we're all in as we embark on this journey together. Okay, so this is where we're gonna jump into the first architecture of what it means to pray spontaneously in the context of the Amida. And this is actually a five-way debate that spans a number of generations in the Talmud, although all in one place, which starts off with the statement of Nachum Hamadi, Nachum the Mede, the Median, who says, Shoel Adam Tzrachav Bishomea Tfilah. A person asks for their needs. Shoel Adam Tzrachav. And notice here, Adam is the broadest view, everybody, which is actually similar to the obligation to say the Amida. B'chol yom mipalel Adam, a person should say the Amida, a person, Adam, should say the Amida every day, says Rabban Gamliel. And Nachum Hamadi says, one should ask for their needs in Shomea Tfilah, in that blessing, Shomea Tfilah, which is actually in the structure of the Amida. You have the first three blessings and the last three blessings, which are always the same. In the middle, in the weekdays, you have the series of requests. And the final blessing in the request is sort of the catch-all blessing, Shema Koleinu, listen to our voice, which ends, blessed are you, God, who hears prayer, which itself is a very generic ending to a blessing. And that was where Nachum Hamadi says, anybody who wants to say anything there, that's where you're supposed to ask for your need. Now, note the language here. It's not, if you have a need, this is where you might want to add it. It seems to be somewhat prescriptive, which is to say, you must ask for your own needs. Here's where you do it. In Shomea Tfilah, which either the Chiddush, the sort of revelation, the new thing here might be, this is where you do it, or the Chiddush might be, of course, you have to do this. You have to do this. I'm also going to tell you where to do it. But the you have to do this might be a way to read this. A Shoel Adam Tzrachav, a person needs to ask for their own needs, i.e., if all you did was say the Amida without some form of spontaneous prayer, you kind of missed the boat. Now, we have some options about what the best place to ask for these needs are. And Nachum Hamadi says it's going to be right smack in the middle section of the Amida at the end. That's where you're going to ask for, after you've done all the public liturgy words of request, you're going to ask your own at the end of that list. But now we're going to see there's some other options as well. So we're going to scroll down to page two, and we're going to see that we have the Tanaitic debate actually extends to two other opinions. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says, Shoel Adam Tzrachav, V'achar kach Yipalel. No, Rabbi Eliezer says, you have to ask for your needs before you say the Amida. It's not something you stick in the middle of the Amida. It sets the tone for your Amida. Or to put it another way, we don't know exactly, I mean, he's deriving this from a verse, but we don't know exactly what is driving this conception. But perhaps it's, if I don't get that thing that I need to express off my chest right away, if I can't get my own prayer out in the beginning, then how am I supposed to have any patience for the words of the liturgy that are given to me? Right? So first I have to get say what I need to say. Shoel Adam Tzrachav, v'achar kach yipalel. And then I'll say the Amida, and that's the way it's going to flow from there. And of course, we have Rabbi Yoshua, who's the sparring partner of Rabbi Eliezer in other places as well. And he says, yipalel, v'achar kach yishal Tzrachav. No, the other way around. You should say the Amida. And at the end of your Amida, at the very, very end, that's when you should ask for your needs. Okay, so you have the three-way debate. Either you do it at the beginning, at the middle, Shomea Tfilah, or at the end. Notice, nobody says, Ein Adam Shoel Tzrachav, or, you know, nobody asks for their needs, or it's inappropriate to ask for your needs, or, you know, this is something that we only do, you know, when you're praying individually, but you would never do this in public. Okay, everybody's already taking for granted Shoel Adam Tzrachav. You have to ask for your needs, and now the question is, what's the best place to do that? And as we'll see, some of these have vestiges, if not the original, that are playing out these different options. Or to put it another way, what ends up happening with our Amida is, it's not only one place in the Amida where you ask for your needs. The truth is, you have multiple places where you could ask for your needs, and you could imagine the Amida being punctured by your own personal prayer all the way through. That would, by the way, lengthen your Amida. I once was at the Mir Yeshiva in Jerusalem. I was sort of there hanging out, seeing what the scene was. And I was there for Mincha. And I davened as I normally daven the Amida. It was like fairly quickly. And then what ended up happening was that I realized no one tipped me off, but they spent 20 minutes on the Amida. Now I've developed a pretty fast Amida. So I was sort of caught, unawares, where clearly either you're saying the words very, very slowly, which is certainly possible. Nobody's policing. Nobody knows what's going on in your own private Amida during the silent Amida. Or you're puncturing your Amida with a bunch of personal requests, personal prayers that are lengthening the time that you're saying the Amida. And we'll see how that plays out a little bit more. Okay, but we're not done, because even though we have the options of before, middle, and after, we have a few other options as well that comes in the next generations in the Amoraim. Okay, so Amar Yehuda Bered Rav Shmuel Bar Shilat Mishmei de Rav. We have a tradition in the name of Rav. Afal pi shamru, even though they said, Shoel Adam Trachav b'Shomea Tfilah, even though they said that you should ask for your needs in Shomea Tfilah, in that ultimate middle blessing, that's the first opinion, Nachum Amadi. Aval im balomar b'sof kol bracha u'bracha me'en kol bracha u'bracha omer. If you're really supposed to do it at Shomea Tfilah, but if it comes to you to say something that's related to the theme of the bracha that you're in, so say it. Okay, so here's where you could really go through and map out all of your personal prayers of expression. If you were going to really take this seriously and say, okay, I've got something that matches the blessing of tshuva, of repentance. I have something that matches the blessing of kibbutz galiot, of, you know, gathering the exiles. All these things, and I'm gonna ask for my own personal needs in every bracha. I'm not gonna limit it to one spot as well. So this is another option. So if we had the Tanaitic debate was before, middle, or at the end, now we have Rav saying actually it could be all the way through. That's a fourth option. You don't have to stop it at Shomea Tfilah. You can do it all the way through. And then we have a couple of specific examples and other traditions that were offered in the name of Rav, and they read like this. Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi Amar Rav. No, Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi says Rav said it like this. Afal pi shamru shoel adam tzrachav b'shomea tfilah, even though we have the opinion that we should say it in Shomea Tfilah. Im yesh l'chole b'tilch beito omer b'birkat cholim. If you remember, we saw this last week. If you have someone who's sick in your house, you should say a specific prayer, not in Shomea Tfilah, but in the Rofe Chole Amo Yisrael, or perhaps Rofe Cholim blessing that was there. Vim tzarich lefarnasa, and if you need income, if you need sustenance, omer b'birkat hashanim. So you should pray specifically for sustenance in the b'birkat hashanim bracha, in the ninth bracha. So these are options where it gets much more specific. And what we have actually in today's Siddurim, in a number of traditional Siddurim, they have language to give you the option of, you know, Yiratzon Milfanecha, I'm going to sort of insert a framework for my personal prayer where I can then say the people that I'm thinking of, Choleh B'toch Beito, whether literally or figuratively, the sick people in my house, I'm going to mention them specifically. That's the liturgy I'm going to use for my spontaneous prayer about sick people that I'm thinking of. And same with Parnassa. There's a liturgy there to ask specifically for a good financial year. Unfortunately, these are both very relevant brachot to be adding to our Amidah these days. Okay, we have the last opinion here. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Afal Bisharmu Shal Adam Trachav Bishomea Tfilah. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi takes Nachum Abadi's, again, his position and says, yeah, you're supposed to do it in Shomea Tfilah. It seems like the consensus after the first generation is that's the answer. You're supposed to do it in the middle. Avalim balomar achart filato afilu keseder yom akiporim omer. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, but if it comes for you to say things after your Amida, sort of resuscitating Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, not Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Rabbi Yeshua the Tana. So yes, you can say that at the end of your Amida, even if it's as long as Seder Yom HaKippurim, even if it's as long as the Yom Kippur liturgy. We can't even tie down where the spontaneous prayer should go. Either it should go before, or it should go in the middle, or it should go after, or it should go all the way throughout the brachot, or it should go in this specific bracha for healing, or this specific bracha for income, or, you know, if you really want to go on and on, the best place to put that might be at the very, very end. And what we have here is a scaffolding for our Amida. That is one that shows how the whole thing was built upon the assumption that, of course, you're going to pray spontaneously in the Amida, and we're just going to figure out a place for you to do that, okay? So we often hold the tension that I think is a false dichotomy between the fixed words of the liturgy and the opportunity to pray spontaneously. And what we see in this text is, of course, you were meant to pray spontaneously. That's like a human need. And they're just telling you, you do it here, you do it here. This is the sort of the way you weave it in. But nobody is suggesting that you would go through a liturgy without having that moment of personal prayer of expression. Okay, and it might even be, Shoel Adam Tzrachav might even be prescriptive, as opposed to if you want to do it, you can do it. It might even be, you have to do it. Like, sit down, think about what you want to say and where you're going to say it. And that's part of what it might mean to say the spontaneous prayer in the context of the Amida. Okay, so Bethany is asking, is there any concern that we might add so much spontaneous prayer that we would forget where we are in the Amida and therefore not fulfill our obligation? That is exactly a concern that comes up later on. So we're going to come back to that, where some rabbis say, I would love to do this, but I always get confused when I try to do that. Yeah, and then sort of Janet's asking, you know, well, what if I'm a slow reader and I can't even get through the whole Amida? You know, what are we supposed to do practically in this? Well, first of all, this might be the blessing of what it means to not be in a minyan. Now, all of a sudden, you get to do what you want on your own time pace. And I say about Rabbi Akiva, when he would daven with other people, he would daven regular. And when he was in his own room, he would daven, start in one corner of the room and end up all the way in the other corner of the room because of all the prostrations that he did, presumably only when he was alone. So part of it is like taking the opportunity to daven alone to say, yeah, I'm gonna go the pace I need to go. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, the blessing of the repetition of the Amida is one in which you don't have to finish your silent Amida. The repetition can be time for you to say, to keep on going, basically. So if you're in a place where they repeat the Amida, then you have double the length of, you know, the allotted time. And, you know, whenever they always say, and if, you know, please continue with your personal prayer, I'm saying take that seriously. And if you're in a place where they stop repeating the Amida, so this is a reason to repeat the Amida, to give people more time who are slower or have more to say, let's say, around this. Okay, I'm going to pause here I'm going to ask Morty if he wants to jump in with any other questions that he's surfaced as the chat's been going. We're trying a new system here where we get to have another voice chime in for any questions. So we'll do a little bit, a word from Morty. Go ahead.
Sure. From Larry Moss over here, do the rabbis ever ask the threshold question of whether it is even appropriate to ask Hashem for stuff at all?
Great. What does it mean to ask something? Which I think is a core question about what is the point of prayer, So there are two ways of looking at that, at least two ways of looking at that. One is that you might say, well, am I asking for something in the sort of like, it's a one-to-one correlation. I ask for it and I get it. That I think is a human desire. It's sort of the no atheists in foxholes. What the former atheist in the foxhole is saying is not a prayer of gratitude. They're making a request. So it could be that there are moments when you actually do want something. And yes, like that's the point of your prayer. I think other ways of thinking about it might be, Soloveitchik had this conception that the request side of prayer is actually the deepest part of prayer, because it allows you to verbalize the vulnerability that you have in your life and actually to give voice to that. If you run through a series of requests, you realize that you actually need things and depend on others, perhaps the divine other, to support you and to help you move through life. And so even if it's not a one-to-one, I ask for this and I get it, or even I ask for this and I don't get it, it's also an opportunity to say, I need things. I am needy. I am not fully formed and fully, you know, perfected right now. And that itself might be a useful orientation to move through the day. I just want to say that tefillah, litpaleo, that seems to indicate specifically the architecture of requests. Or to think about it another way, the design of the Amidah is to bracket the middle part, which is the request. If the base case is the weekday Amidah, the base case is requests. Yeah, it has some brachas in the beginning, brachas at the end. They're very important. But usually in ancient literature, and certainly rabbinic literature, the center is what is essential. So it's not only did they imagine that you like had permission to ask for things, it was the main thing. And it's bracketed by other brachot, but the main thing is the tefillah. There is a text in the Gemara that says that the reason that the Amidah is silent is because if it was out loud, you would be embarrassed in front of your neighbor for all the things you were saying in the Amidah. And what that means is not in a world in which you're only saying the public liturgy, because that's something that's not embarrassing. Everybody would presumably be saying it. But if you're saying things that no one else is saying, so it might be that you'd be embarrassed to say it. You might be embarrassed to verbalize all the things that you don't have. And that's something that we're given the gift of just whispering so that no one else can hear it. Okay, I want to move on a little bit more. And actually, let's see if we can do our second poll here. Poll number one, where do you offer prayer in your own words? Since we just talked about that in this source. So let's see what that poll looks like here. Where do you offer prayer in your own words? In the context of regular liturgy, separate entirely from regular liturgy, I don't offer prayers in my own words, or both. I do it in the context of the regular liturgy and also separate. We'll let you guys pull that. It looks like we have a group that's both A and B is leading the pack here, which is to say both in the context of the regular liturgy. And I also just say some prayers, you know, when I'm walking down the street, but separate from the regular liturgy. 10% of you admitted the truth, which is I don't offer my own prayers. I just go through the regular liturgy. I don't avail myself of the spontaneous prayers. And 26% said, yes, I do it only in the context of the regular liturgy as an addition, which is what we saw here in this text. Okay, so for those of us who are both A and B in the context of the regular liturgy and outside the context, I wanna look at that as well as we move forward. And I'm gonna offer us a challenge, a sort of take home assignment about what it might mean to do that a little bit more. But before we get to the take home assignment, I wanna look a little bit more at the raise Bethany's question of, well, what does it mean to do this? What would it mean to pray spontaneously? How did they conceive of that? So let's take a look at source number three at the bottom of page two. Rabbi Shimon ben Netanel, those of you who are learning in our Pirkei Avot, every night at 8:45, Hadar faculty are leading the counting of the Omer at 8:45 on our Facebook page. You can do it, or you get a Zoom link. And I did the second parak of Pirkei Avot. We have this Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon ben Netanel, who's actually a not well-known Tana. He's not your regular Rabbi Shimon, which is your Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon ben Netanel says, "Vezahir b'kriyat shma," and in some manuscripts of Batfilah, be very careful about saying kriyat shma and the Amida. But scroll down here. We're going to get the section that matters to us for our study here tonight. Okay, uksha'ata mitpalel, when you say the Amida, al ta'as tefilatcha keva, ela rachamim, v'tachanunim, lifnei ha'makom baruch hu. When you say the Amida, you should say the Amida. Don't make your Amida keva, fixed. Rather make it rachamim v'tachanunim. Make it full of mercies and supplications, tachanun. Chain is grace, and tachanun is asking for grace, which is grace is undeserved love. So what you see here is the contrast between keva and tachanun. Now, nowadays, we often say this is the contrast between keva and kavana. That, I think, was actually only introduced by Heschel in the 20th century. It has a nice ring to it, keva and kavana. But I actually think that keva, nobody assumed that you couldn't have kavana for keva. The fixed prayer, of course you're supposed to have kavana for that. You're also supposed to have kavana, obviously, for your own prayer. It's hard to pray in your own words without having kavana for them, without having intention behind them. But keva is also meant to be filled with kavana. It's the contrast is keva versus tachanunim. The fixed words versus the words that are sort of free-form supplications. Okay, so here we see an opinion, Rabbi Shimon ben Netanel, which is you can't only make your Amida keva, you have to make it also, presumably also, tachanunim. Now, it might not be also, it might be only tachanunim, like forget the regular words, but I'm not sure that he was going that radical, although you could read it that way. We're going to see another expression of this, more famous expression of this in the Mishnah and Brachot, so we'll scroll down a little bit. Now, this is a four-way debate in the Mishnah and Brachot, which actually is a combination of two Mishnayot. Some Mishnah commentators read it this way. I think it is the right way, the most obvious way to read this Mishnah. That's a four-way debate about what are we supposed to do when we say the Amida. Rabban Gamliel says, "Bechol yom mitpalel adam shmona esrei." Every day, a person should say 18 brachot. That is to say, the full Monty, 100% of the Amida. Everybody's got to do that, and they got to do it every day. Mitpalel, mitpalel, in rabbinic literature almost always means pray the Amida, not pray broadly, but say the Amida. Rabbi Yoshua Meir, min Shmona Asrei. Rabbi Yoshua says you do like essence of Shmona Asrei, like a hint of Shmona Asrei. You don't do the full 18, all the words. That's a heavy lift for everybody to do. So you're going to do the essence of it. And that's like, we have some examples of that. Actually, Magen Avot is a Me'ein. It's Me'ein Sheva because it's Shabbat. There's only seven blessings. But it's a main. You just get a hint of each line. Magen Avot Bidvaro is the first blessing. Magen Avot Mechayim Etim B'Ma'amaro is the second blessing. Mechayim Etim Ha'el Hakadosh In Kamo, etc. So you're moving through, and you're just getting a hint of each of them. There are other versions of that for the weekday Amida that the Babylonian Talmud offers us as well. The name of Shmuel. Okay, Rabbi Akiva, third position. So Rabbi Gamliel says you got to say the whole thing. Rabbi Yoshua says you got to say essence of the whole thing. And then Rabbi Akiva says, well, Im shagura, or in the manuscripts, shagrat tefillah tobefiv, yipalel shmona asrei, v'im lav ben shmona asrei. Rabbi Akiva says, it depends how well it's coming out of your mouth. If it's coming out of your mouth fluently, then say the whole thing. And if it's not, just cut over to the essence of shmona asrei. So he gives you some option there. It's not totally clear what he's talking about. Shlomo Naev from the university has a long article about that. But let's say it's some middle position. But then we get Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, haoset tefillah tokeva, ein tfilato tachanunim. If you make your tefillah entirely fixed, then your tefillah, your Amida, does not have supplications in it. Okay, so it seems here either Rabbi Eliezer is saying, do not say any fixed words, like it's just against the whole idea of fixity, or do not say only fixed words. You have to say tachanunim, which is sort of the shoel adam tzrachav. A person must ask their needs in the Amida. That's the requirement side, as opposed to when it's not a nice to have, it's you gotta have that in there, otherwise you haven't said what the essence of the Amida is. The essence of the Amida is your private prayer. So I want to say that in this position, right, the idea that you're gonna take some time for your own private prayer is perhaps the essential act of the Amida. It's not a compromise. It's not like a newfangled way of praying that the rabbis never heard of. It's in fact something that Rabbi Eliezer is saying you have to do. And when you put it next to that other text where you had the other positions from Avodah Zarah, so you see, he's not the only one who's saying this, okay? So this is all to say that if all you're doing is saying the Amida is fixed, then Rabbi Eliezer is very concerned that you're missing a basic element of it, which is tachanunim. Yeah, so Larry's saying, well, maybe it's not clear that tachanunim means private prayer. Possibly, although I would say that it's hard to imagine the way they're conceiving of tachanunim. It seems to be very personal. And what we're going to see is there are some tachanunim that we end up saying in our liturgy, which are not personal, although they're meant to be more individual than the fixed liturgy, but they themselves became fixed. So we'll see how that plays out as we move a little bit forward here. Okay. And does it make prayer more stressful? Yeah, I mean, Rabbi Eliezer didn't shy away from stressful stuff. He had high standards and a lot of demands. So I think, you know, it's as Heschel said, it's the rare person who's able to give voice to the act of expression. You got to really think about what you want to say, and that could be a hard thing to do. And we'll see. So now we're going to try to interpret this a little bit more and get some sense of, okay, let's say I want to do this. Let's say I want to go for don't make your tefillah keva or entirely keva. So let's get some understanding about what options that could even mean. All right, so let's look at number five. This is the Yerushalmi is trying to figure out what Rabbi Eliezer meant when he said, Hauset tefillah to keva, if you make your tefillah entirely keva, then it's not tachanunim, which seems to be a bad thing. Okay, so we have a few opinions here. Rabbi Abahu b'shem Rabbi Elazar, bilvad shelo yehe kikore ba'igeret. Let's say one opinion is from Rabbi Elazar, as long as you don't read it like a letter, that is to say, this is not about new words, this is about the type of expression that we're using, okay? So if you're just reading it along as if it was yesterday's news, actually another essay uses that image, right? You're reading it along like it's a letter without any expression or connection to the words. This is presumably like a letter that you don't have a connection, like junk mail, let's say it like that, okay? So this is about, don't read it like that, okay? Give some expression to it, give some affective flavor to it, which might not be the same as new words, okay? So that's one of him, Rabbi Elazar. Now, this is the other side. Rabbi Yossi says, you've got to come up with something new every single day. Okay, this is about the content. The content has to be new, and you can't keep going back to the old stuff you said yesterday. The challenge of the Amida is to think of something new. Then they give you an example. Achitofel, who was the advisor to David, who then becomes a traitor and starts advising his son Avshalom when he rebels. Achitofel haya mipel shalosh tefillot chadashot b'chol yom. Achitofel apparently would pray three Amidas that were entirely new every single day. Okay, so it's not just a little davar, not just an aspect of it that's new. He would do an entirely new Amida three times a day. I once took a class at Union Theological Seminary as one of the few Jews in the class. And it was a class that ended with the sort of liberal Protestant seminary. It ended with mincha time for the Protestants. And every single day, it was a new service from scratch. There was no baseline. Okay, that's the Achitofel way. You start again every single day. Maybe related to his name, Achitofel Tefillah. So maybe he's Mr. Amida, as it were. He really knows how to pray. Then maybe Zera says, well, whenever I would do that, this is Bethany's concern, I would make a mistake. And I can only do that with Rabbi Abbas and name Rabbi Elazar, as long as one doesn't read it like it. I tried coming up with new things every day, but I got too distracted. So then I ended up just going for the way I say the Amida as opposed to the content of the Amida. Then we get some other stories. Rabbi Elazar, he would do a new Amida every day. Rabbi Abba would say a new bracha every day. Okay, this is not what we have in mind. We think about the conservative nature of rabbinic liturgy. These guys were out there doing things new every day. Now we get a report that may sound familiar to us. Okay, well, what if the new thing, what if the spontaneous prayer is actually just a quote from Tanakh, right? What if it's something that we say that's new, but we didn't write it? Okay, I'm sort of applying something to my tefillah. And this is what Rabbi Yossi of Sidon said, named Rabbi Yochanan, before his Amida, before his tefillah, he would say, Adonai sfatai tiftach ufi agid tehillatecha. Adonai, open my lips and my mouth will speak your praises. So here we have a verse that does remain in our Amida. That's the, add your things before the Amida starts, even though we'll learn later that you can't really, interrupt between Shema and Amida, but maybe this is an exception. Probably understands it as a connection. Okay, but this is a new way of praying. I'm going to say a verse. So maybe what it means to pray spontaneously is to take out the Bible, to look for another thing that you didn't write, but you're going to apply it to the situation that you're experiencing. And that's the new element. That's the tachanun. That's the supplication, as it were. Okay, I'm supplicating for God to open my mouth, maybe because I've got more things to say spontaneously inside the Amidah. Like Adonai Sfatai Tiftach, that request actually becomes much more powerful if you think about it as, I'm about to say something new, something spontaneous, something from my own heart, and I need your help getting the words to form, as opposed to, I'm about to say the liturgy I've said 1,000 times before, and I don't really need your help. This, in fact, itself is a liturgy, and I'm just saying it out of rote. That might not be what we're aiming for here. Okay, so maybe it was the introduction to his own further personal prayer. After his Amidah, he would say, let the words of my mouth and the utterings of my heart be acceptable before you, Adonai, my rock and my redeemer, which is one of the endings of the Amidah that we have until today. So he structures it with a verse in the beginning, a verse in the end. Maybe that's a form of saying something new. Rabbi Yudan would say both of them before his Amidah, just to be clear. Rabbi Yudan is saying something that we don't do anymore, but he would say both of these verses as the opening to the Amidah. It actually is interesting because it ends, Adonai Tzuri B'Goali, you're supposed to do Smichat Geula L'Tfilah. If you finish with the word Goali, God is my Redeemer, then you have this connection between redemption and the Amidah, and he's sort of preserving that. They found, when they opened up the Geniza in Cairo, 150 years ago, they found this that Eretz Yisrael Sidurim had this Rabbi Yudan approach. They put both of the verses at the beginning. So that's one option. Again, maybe this is more liturgy as we experience it, but maybe it's I'm taking something from the Tanakh and I'm adding it to my Amidah. Okay, so this is all the way of what does it mean to not do the Amidah entirely keva? Here are some options. You could do it. Number one, don't read it like a letter. Number two, say something new or say the entire thing new in the most extreme way. But that's hard to do. Rabbi Zera says I couldn't really do that. So it's either how you read it, what you're saying, or maybe add some sort of fixed verse, but you're applying it in a new way. These are all ideas of what it might mean to pray spontaneously or to offer something new in the Amidah. Okay, let's scroll a little bit further here, and we're gonna get to the part of the source sheet in which we're gonna look through what is the section that follows our Amidah, which is Tachanun. So we're gonna get there in a second. Okay. I brought you some other sources. The Bavli in Brachot also says, trying to figure out what is Keva. And we have similar ideas that we saw in the Bavli. And again, Rabbi Zera says, Bethany's concerned. I can make something new in it, but I'm concerned lest I become distracted. So I don't mess around with that. Maybe I'm just going to do it as Korei Ba'igeret. I'm not going to read it like a letter. Okay. So now what I want to say in the last part of our time together is we actually have a section of our prayers, which is called tachanun. That is to say, it's called supplication. And so in that way, we're going to look at what is that section of the prayer service, the tachanunim, and how could we use that to our advantage? So looking a little bit at the history of tachanun, right now I would say people are so excited when tachanun is canceled for any number of reasons. It's like, great, we save 3 minutes. We don't have to put our body in a certain position, etc. I'm saying to you, the bottom line on Tachanun is, this is your opportunity to pray spontaneously. You have it inside the Amidah. You have it in certain blessings in the Amidah. You have it as the Amidah itself has to be something new, perhaps, in this understanding of not making it entirely Keva. But you certainly have it at the end of the Amidah. Or to put it another way, what do you think is the way in which the service would end? It really ended with the Amidah. So everything that comes afterwards is sort of tack on. And the first tack on is your opportunity to pray spontaneously. That also some place for Torah reading. That's the other sort of activity, I would say, that comes afterward. Okay, so what we're going to dive into right now is Tachanun. So why isn't Tachanun the place for all requests? Right, it's a good point. In some ways, Tachanun could be the place in which we make our fundamental real requests and not inside the Amidah at all. By the way, a lot of Tachanun, the liturgy that ended up being in the spot called Tachanun in the Sidur, ends up being very penitential, right? It's, we have all these sins, which seems to be related. There's some theories out there that it's connected to the fast day liturgy and the Slichot, which are other additions that we make to the Amidah, where we basically say, how sinful we are, and this is an opportunity to pile on that theme. But there are older versions of Tachanun that actually have a much broader mix of not just penitentiary prayers, but also supplicatory prayers, like really asking for things specifically. And we're going to see some of that as we move through what Tachanun was. And Professor Heilman saying, why is it longer on Monday and Thursday? It's a great question, because it seems like if it was related to public fasting, so maybe Monday and Thursday was that place where the fast day would occur, and that therefore the liturgy got longer. There is a story in the medieval text that says that the reason that Monday and Thursday is specific there is because of a story of three travelers who were saved and offered some supplications to God as a result of being saved, and it got connected to Monday and Thursday because of the specific historic literary historical experience of that. I brought you that story at the end of the source sheet. We're not going to look at it together, but you can see there. Okay, Morty, are there any other questions we should dive into right now before we move to the last part of Tachanun?
Yeah, one quick question. A few people have asked about the prohibition of saying petitionary prayer on Shabbat and how that plays a role in all of this.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of the modern experience of many Jews is to, and perhaps something that we're missing a lot, is the Shabbat experience. And in that world, actually, Shabbat Himilizok, this is not a time for crying out. Shabbat is actually sort of a construct in which everything is already there for you. It's set up so that we sort of imagine the perfect world as it's meant to be. And therefore, it's the opposite of you're going to, sort of acknowledge all of the vulnerabilities and lacks that are associated with making requests. Shabbat is a time to say the opposite. I could imagine a world in which I have everything I need, and it's me'ein olam haba. It's an essence, a taste of the world to come. And therefore, it's not appropriate to make requests in that place. At the same time, the Misha Beirach that became so popular with the Debbie Friedman tune, but for hundreds of years, was connected to Shabbat, already going back to Rabbi Meir's statement in the Talmud, yes, you can ask for people's help on Shabbat because this metaphor only goes so far. Like, the person is actually sick and I can't resist making a request there. So I sort of poke through, I puncture the metaphor, for a moment, and I say, I want this person to be healed. Shabbat yom milizok, even though, you're not supposed to ask for this on Shabbos. The other place in that Yerushalmi asks on Shabbat, why do you say in Birkat HaMazon, Re'enu Zunenu Parnasenu? You say in Birkat HaMazon, God, our shepherd, feed us and give us Parnasa. It's like, why are you allowed to say that on Shabbat? So it might be that, the two core things that actually emerge in our first text, the two core extra things that I'm worried about all the time are health and, financial security. And even on Shabbat, it sort of punctures the metaphor. So it could be that Shabbat is meant to be perfect and no requests are needed. But even there, we sort of sneak something in. Okay, so we're gonna end with the last section, which is going to be on Tachanun. Let's take a look at some of the earlier texts on Tachanun. We'll see that the idea of Tachanun first appears in Masechet Sofrim as if it's something that we already know. Masechet Sofrim is a complicated text to date, wide-ranging theories on that. It was originally thought to be old. Deborah Reed Blank did some work on it to demonstrate that it's Gaonic, that is to say sometime in the year 600 to 1000, maybe on the later end of that. So it's okay. So Lefinkach Ein Omrim Tachanunin Kol Yomei Nisan. Here's a rule in which you're not supposed to say Tachanun the whole month of Nisan. Already it seems to be something that we know. Tachanun is a service that you cut for this particular reason, okay? But the truth is, Tachanun was not something that ever was really required. We see in the tour, in that great code of Jewish law, that Rav Natronai Gaon, so he's in the Gaonic period in the 9th century, says, Katav Nifilat Apayim, that's the other name for Tachanun, falling on one's face, Bitzibor Alpaneim, Achara Tfila Rishuti. It's totally optional to say Tachanun. Now, I think this is the point. It's like, this is your moment for supplicatory prayer. You don't have anything to say. Okay, I'm not going to force you to say it, but it's something that is like the slot for that, okay? And we see the idea of Tachanun as this is when you say it, this is when you don't say it, is a later development. It was like a time for people to say things that they were, that they wanted to say. It goes back and forth. Saje Gaon, who's living in the 9th, 10th century, says, Sarich ha-ma'amin li-pol al-panav, Sajid Gaon says, you must, the believer must fall down on their face. But we can see, just scroll down to the next page, to the Rambam, Morty, and we'll see what the Rambam says. At the end of the Amida, the Rambam says, at the end of your final bow, nofel al-panav arza u-mitchanen b'chol ha-tachanunim she-yirtzeh. That's your moment when you should say anything you want to say at the end of your Amida. This is your time to say it. That's repeated in Orchot Chaim in Provence. So there is a tradition of, after the Amida, you say a bunch of things. That's what you say. It's not a fixed liturgy. It's not something that we have got to work your way through. You have Psalm 6 in there. You've got this particular text. There are traditions of these texts that go back old. So I'm not saying it's all totally new. Ruth Langer's done some work on this in the Geniza work, what they were saying in Eretz Yisrael. There are some old texts that flow through. But the core idea of Tachanun as a slot is, you finished your Amida, it's time to say your own words. Now, the last part of the Amida that we have is, in fact, I would say, a proto-Tachanun, is Elohai Netzor L'Shani Mera, God, save my, guard my tongue from evil. That is a opportunity for individual prayer that was tacked onto the Amida because, yes, at the end of your Amida, that's when you're supposed to say your spontaneous prayer. That was Rav Amnuna's prayer. He said that. It got folded into the Siddur. Now we say it all the time, but it was Elohai. It's not Eloheinu. It's my God, right? I'm speaking individually here. I'm speaking in the first person singular. That is a sign of it being a prayer that is particular to me. It's my spontaneous prayer. Now, just to show you that Tachanun as the slot at the end of the Amida where people would pray their own prayers, we have a series of rabbis, both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, in the Babylonian and Jerusalem Talmuds, who we have reports of what they would say at the end of their Amida. Here it is, their own spontaneous prayer. Would they say it every day, every time they said the Amida? Did this become their own fixed prayer that they would say individually? So we have version after version of this. You can see them consecutively in the Talmud, and I'll leave you to read them. You have the source sheet, and those of you who downloaded it, it's in the chat and on the email. But I'll just look at the first one here, just so we can see it. Rabbi Elazar, when Rabbi Elazar betar de Messiah Tzlotze, after he finished his Amida, right? That is to say, not like 6 hours later. This is the way you finish the Amida. The way you finish the Amida is by offering your own personal prayer. And he would say, Amarachi, he would say this, Yiratzon milfanecha Adonai Eloheinu. It's interesting, you're Eloheinu, although I think in some manuscripts Elohai. Shetishkon bifureinu ahava v'achava v'shalom v're'ut. Right? These are, you know this from the Sheva Brachot, right? So he's grabbing from other places, or maybe the flowed in the other direction, right? May you cause to dwell in our lot love, companionship, peace, and friendship, that you increase our borders with students, that you make successful our last end with hope. You place our portion in Gan Eden. You establish us in good company, the good inclination in your world, that we may rise early and find our hearts yearning to fear your name, Yira, and may the coolness of our soul come before you for good. So there's a sort of a poetic expression. He sort of worked on this. It has a nice mellifluous sound in the Hebrew, but it is something that is specific to his prayer. And then we have like a series of rabbis that work through what would they say at the end of their Amida? We have Rabbi Elazar, we have Rabbi Yochanan, okay, we have Rabbi Zeira. He was the one who had this hard time saying it in the middle, so he saved it at the end. You can see here, Rav after his Amida would say, or just slow down there for a second, Yiratzon milfanecha Adonai Eloheinu, shetitein lanu chayim arukim, chayim shel shalom, chayim shel tova, chayim shel bracha, chayim shel parnasa, life of peace, goodness, blessing, sustenance. This is, we know this from the liturgy of the announcing the new moon, right? But this is really drawn from here into that liturgy. So Rav would say, what I want my life to be. Let me say over and over again, Chaim Shel, Chaim Sheyesh, Chaim She'ein. This is what I want my life to have, to not have. It's all there, okay? Mar Bereid Ravina, when he would finish his Amida, he would say, just scroll up a little bit so we can read it. Elohai, Netzor L'Shoni Meira, B'Sifto Taimi Daber Mirma. Here you have the core of the blessing that we say, or the phrases that we say at the end of our Amida. And just note, it's just ripped from the headlines of this section of the Talmud. It's just Mar Bereid Ravina. is a Me'isha Ra'ah from Save Me From an Evil Woman, which actually is in no manuscript, so you can just cross that one right out. And this is what ends up being liturgy, what ends up being fixed into our Sidur was just a personal prayer of Mar Berei D'Rav Ina that we have here. Okay, we're going to scroll down through this, all these versions of this also in Yerushalmi. We're not going to look at this here, but I just brought them to show you all the ways in which the Talmud is preserving some of these texts for us. Number 14, Professor Heilman, that's the one about the story of how we got the longer Tachanun. I want to scroll to the very end here, which is the other place where outside of the Amida, where we might think about what it might mean to offer a spontaneous prayer. And that is the tradition to bless children, or in some versions to bless students. I would say to bless someone that you have a relationship with, that happened Bilel Shabbat, as we enter into Shabbat. And what's interesting and fascinating about this custom is that originally when it shows up in the early modern period, it seems that it was just a bracha. You bless your children. What do you say to your children? You don't say, Yisimcha Elohim ke'Ephraim mechim Menashe, may God make you like Ephraim and Menashe. You don't say the priestly blessing. You just bless them with spontaneous words of blessing that you wish for them at the end of the week when you're entering into Shabbat. Actually, there's another reason for this blessing, says this source, Chaim Berebi Betzalel. There's another reason for this blessing, which is it's the way of a parent to be constantly angry with their children and to curse them all throughout the week. And so too a rabbi and their students. What I like about this, okay, it may not be a model of what modern parenting and teaching is, but it might be a true report, you know? We all get frustrated, we all get angry, we all show our emotions. And maybe the blessing as we enter Shabbat is an opportunity for us to say, here's what I really feel, here's what I should be feeling, here's the way in which I sort of relate to you in my ideal, just like Shabbat is the construct where you don't need anything. So the blessing that you offer as you enter Shabbat is also this moment to say, you know, I really want to relate to you differently. And it doesn't have to be the way it is in the stressed out week. But in all of these early reports of this tradition of blessing, it was a spontaneous blessing that was tailored, presumably, to the person you were speaking to. So what I want to leave us with is the impression that praying spontaneously is, in fact, a very old Jewish idea. It's baked into the DNA of the Amida. Where you put it, that's a debate. But whether you put it, not a debate. Shoel adam tzrachav, a person needs to ask for their needs. And the idea that your Amida would be absent some form of tachanun, some form of supplication, is also like not desirable. And there's everything from inventing a new Amida every single time you daven to at least saying the Amida in a different intonation. It gives us the impression that this is something that's coming from your heart in a new way. And tachanun, that service that we have at the end of the Amida, is not a tack on for only penitential prayers that you already have printed for you. That's your moment to say the spontaneous prayer that you've been waiting for. The Rambam says, say anything you want. That's your time to do it. And even if you divorce it from the structure of the Amida and you think about where else might we say our blessings, so the entrance into Shabbat as a moment in which we might be able to tailor a blessing to someone who we loved, someone who we're in a relationship with, someone who we might have been angry with during the week, that this is our opportunity to speak spontaneously to them. That's another opportunity to do that. So I'm going to pause here and thank you all for joining me in this series. I'm hopeful that as we move through this very difficult time, that the opportunity to connect to some of these prayers in a new way is helpful. We appreciate all the ways in which you've been supportive of Hadar and all of our teaching throughout all of the offerings that we're putting online. Thank you so much for learning with me in these sessions, and look forward to connecting with you.